somehow you are right, that you are a doctor, that you're entitled, that you don't have to listen, and that you did treatment. My page only goes to 100 years. Sir, I'm giving you 175 years. I just signed your death warrant.
If he was given a year of prison time for every woman that he sexually assaulted, that he molested, 145 years would not cover it. Obviously, he's not going to live 145 years. But if he got 1 year for every woman, it still would not cover the amount of women that he molested. He was given another sentence after this, and I think he's got to go through court one more time. It's three separate cases. Of course, he got 10 years on a whole nother child porn charge, which I don't – what the bloody hell? And then he recently got like another 130 years. So he's looking at 300 years in prison. So obviously, it's very likely he's going to die in prison, or he might live 300 years. He is a doctor. But 300 years, yeah, if you give him 1 year, which by the way, when you sexually assault somebody, when you rape somebody, you know, when you fondle a child, you ruin that child for the rest of their days. Now, there's therapy, there's support groups, there's things that we can do to help people that are victims of rape or sexual assault. But really, that kind of thing, we carry that with us for our entire lives. So you destroyed 245, that's the number now, 245 women's lives. If you got a year for each of those, 245 years, well, you got 300 years now. But 300 years still doesn't cover it. Because you destroyed their entire lives. To some degree, every one of them will always define themselves with respect to this incident. They'll say, yeah, you know, what makes me in my life is I'm this and I'm that, but I'm also a survivor of Larry Nassar. 245! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 239. My name is Melvin, I am your host, and I am pissed about this subject. So, let's get right into it.
Over those 30 years, when survivors came forward, adult after adult, many in positions of authority protected you. In fact, many adults had you convince the survivors that they were being dramatic or had been mistaken. This is like being violated all over again. How do you sleep at night?
Ladies and gentlemen, meet Allie Raisman. She is the brave young woman that brought this forward. You say brave. There's 245 of them, yeah. But she was the first, and only after she was willing to say something. So, there were rumblings over the years that this doctor might have been carrying this kind of thing out. And by the way, nobody carries this kind of thing out alone. You know, the rumblings come from some. Women are not sitting around, much as you might hear this from Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, some of these others. Women do not sit around and make up ways to take away men's maleness away by accusing them of sexual assault. This kind of stuff happens, and it happens a lot. And they don't talk about it because of the deep shame that's associated with it. And then, of course, they're going to say, well, they're just on their period. They just need to get over it. They're just being dramatic. Larry Nassar, when this case was first brought forward, Larry Nassar wrote this letter to the court that talked about how women are just misinterpreting. And they don't know what they're talking about. And they're just remembering things wrong. And I'm not going to read his statement. But I'll tell you how it ends. And it gives you everything that you need to know about one Larry Nassar. And it ends with, hell hath no fury like a woman's scorn. And he says, they're just doing this because I'm a man. And they's women. And they simply cannot handle it.
I did look at photos of him online before I went in there just to mentally prepare myself. Uh-huh. I didn't know how I would feel, but when I walked in there, being with this army of survivors, I just felt an instant connection. We were hugging each other. We really are an army of survivors, and this is just the beginning for us.
Larry Nassar is just the first person who is going to fall with respect to this. When we learned about the Harvey Weinstein thing, of course, all fingers point at Weinstein. But then his publicist recently committed suicide. because, of course, she was associated with him all these years. And to a degree, she knew about this stuff and said nothing about it. She, yes, she as a woman, she just committed suicide because she realized how much of a role she played in helping this man destroy these women's lives. And Larry Nassar is just the first. 30 years he got away with this. Who the hell else knew about this? There's an article over at the Washington Post by Sally Jenkins. The headline, U.S. Gymnastics allowed Larry Nassar to prey upon innocent victims and Congress must investigate. Quoting here, a national organization with the initials USA on it forced young girls to submit to pelvic exams by a child molester. Literally hundreds of them were isolated in mandatory camps and were repeatedly assaulted by a barehanded pedophile for years on end, while nobody cared to notice that no decent doctor would perform such an exam on young girls, much less ungloved. Where in the fresh hell is an independent investigation into USA Gymnastics, and why isn't Congress threatening to smash the U.S. Olympic Committee's charter into pieces with a gavel over this? Dig this, ladies and gentlemen. Ungloved pelvic exams on women. These are athletes. Cyclists, swimmers, gymnasts. Why in the hell is this doctor without gloves shoving his hands in teenage women's hoo-hoos? And he largely dealt with very young women. The gymnastics is a young man, young woman's game. There are very few things in the Olympics that older people can do. The Olympics has always been for the young because that's when we are at our physical peak. Quoting here again, it's only the worst sex abuse scandal in the history of sports and maybe in the history of the country. USA Gymnastics not only allowed serial pedophile Larry Nassar unsupervised access to the scores to scores of girls in its charge over 30 years, it required them to submit to him and his utterly unjustifiable vaginal examinations. There was no saying, I don't like this doctor. I want my own. The organization systematically deprived them of any right to say no, to ask for alternative treatment. It makes the Hollywood rapes almost look principled. USA Gymnastics and the USOC created the perfect environment for this monster. So let's put those pieces together and understand why Nassar's trial should just be the start of the investigation and not the end. His years of criminal sexual assaults on gymnasts could have happened only with the assistance of U.S. sports officials and coaches such as Martha and Bella Caroli and John Gattert, who let Nassar violate basic medical norms on their watch. Could have happened only because they were willfully blind to his pelvic adjustments on young women athletes, for which there was no good reason, no good medical reason. It could have happened only because they failed to exercise the most basic, common, fundamental good sense in protecting children, allowing him to probe girls ungloved and sequester himself with them without any nurse present. Here is how negligent they were. The girls were required to see him in their hotel and dorm rooms at night, alone and on their beds. There is evidence of a culture in our country that allows this to happen. We protect incredibly powerful men when they do this kind of thing. Whether that be Weinstein, whether that be Nassar, or of course, whether that be Donald Trump.
We kind of gave him, all right, you get a mulligan. You get a do over here.
A mulligan for a molester. Peep that. Trump gets a mulligan. So what is Franklin Graham talking about there with giving the president a mulligan? We found out that Donald Trump paid off a porn star. After the Hollywood, Access Hollywood tape came out in October of 2016, which looked bad for Trump in most of our eyes, but of course, in the eyes of evangelical voters, it's just fine. But Trump, realizing, oh my crap, I've got all kinds of other scandalous things out there that I've done, instantly went to Stormy Daniels and decided that it was time to pay her off. And the reason why was because after he had married Melania, after he had impregnated Melania, and after she was home with the baby, the baby's 1 year old, he decided to run out and have an affair with a porn star. Now, consensual, for what we know so far, all consensual. But seriously, guys, why the hell is this kind of thing okay with evangelical voters?
I believe at 70 years of age, the president is a much different person today than he was 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever.
When you go to the evangelical voters themselves, they, of course, they've just decided not to believe this. And the reason why is because they believe this president is providing them with religious freedom. Now, by the way, you are free in this country to be religious. You are free to believe in any God that you want, free to follow any religion. You are not allowed to have a religion where you kill people, things of that nature. You can't force your religion upon other people, unless, of course, you get a job in government and you tell people that we have to write this law or that law because your religion says that that law has to be written because everyone else has to believe what your religion believes. Ridiculous. By and large, we do have religious freedom. But what religious freedom means to most religious people is that people follow their religion. So I was talking with my daughter this morning, and she mentioned that there's a girl in her group that is a Christian. Someone in her group made a snide comment, sort of snide offhand, and it's one of those things that would have passed if nobody took notice of it. But one girl in the group instantly spoke up and just began protesting about how she is not going to stand for this, how she is a proud Christian, soldier of Christ, and how dare you. There's this thing in conservative media where they've been telling Christians for years that they are the victims. A lot of religious legislation that's drawn up by evangelicals strips away the rights of other people. You're a woman, you can't have an abortion. You can't even have birth control. Oh, you're gay, you want to get married. You want to marry your male partner, you're a female, you want to marry your female partner. You can't do that because it's against my religion. So they have these laws that strip other people of their rights. Right? These rights that are not given to us by God, these rights that we the people say that we should be able to have these rights. You know, a couple of dudes want to get married, it's not going to hurt anybody. She goes and gets an abortion, and especially if you don't know about it, it's not hurting you. But they've been fed this line for years that they are the victims because, oh my God, there's dudes kissing each other. So the reason that they're willing to stand for this guy doing this, being accused of rape and all levels of sexual assault, cheating on his wife while she's home with their child. The reason why they're completely okay with all this is because he has finally provided them with religious freedom.
Has the president lived up to your expectation?
Yeah, kind of broken into categories. I would say character and you have policy. I think he's doing really well in policy, but the character is an issue. At times.
What has he done in character that's disappointed you?
For instance, what was said in the office, supposedly in the Oval Office last week, about other nations, that is contrary to what Christ would stand for in the Bible and what Christians would be about.
I think that there's a lot of frustration both with him and with the press, a lot of sense of people are at the point where they just are beginning to not care.
Relationship matters, and if everybody who disagrees with him walks away from him, then we just lost our voice too, and that's not wise.
Let's talk specifically about DACA, and if there are people in your community who have concerns about what the president's position is on DACA.
There is a misnomer that this president is out to go into neighborhoods and tear families apart. So in my vocation, I have to be able to say, look, we're here to offer hope. I can't break the law. I can't use my church as a sanctuary church, but then I'm torn because I'm looking at families with the potential of being ripped apart. It's a real difficult place to be. I think we need more conversation around it.
We are having conversation around it, and here's the way the conversation goes. Yes, families are being torn apart. Yes, your church should be used as a sanctuary for these people because you are a Christian, and we are a nation of immigrants. But whoa, whoa, whoa. Easy there, Melvin. Don't go trying to strip away their religious freedoms.
What do you believe that the faith community would like to see from the president going forward?
I think what we'd like to see is religious liberty with some real teeth to it, some real legislation behind it.
What does that mean?
That means that if I own a venue and I believe marriage is between one man and one woman.
There we go.
And a gay couple says, I want to get married here, my gay wedding, at your venue. And that owner says, not at this venue. Because we don't celebrate that.
I'd love to see states say, you know what? We're going to criminalize abortion. And we're going to stop this murdering of unborn people.
What would you like the president to do?
I would like him to follow the word of God. There is an answer in the Bible for every issue. And if he just follows that, we will be blessed. And that we can be a blessing to others.
The murdering of unborn people. We're not concerned about the murdering of born people. If you're in a church, or say you're at a rock concert, or say you're at a movie theater, and you've been born, well, hell, you've already lived. It's totally cool if you die. But the unborn, my goodness gracious. And then, of course, I want to unpack what the other guy said, too, about if I have a church, and these two homos won't get married in my church, well, dang gummit. If you have a church, marriage is not a religious thing, necessarily. So there's two types. There's the legal part. That's where you have the contract, and I'm at a lot of weddings, and they sign the documents afterward. That's the legal part. The part where you stand up in front of people, the part where you take the vows, especially if you take religious vows, that's not really the part. The thing that seals it is after they sign the contract. And then, of course, after they sign the contract, they go out and they take pictures. These are the first pictures that we have taken since we became, once we were married. And you weren't married after just the vows. You're married after the legal part. So if you have a church and you don't want gay people getting married in your church, actually you can do that. But if you are, say, a wedding venue and you operate to the general public, you can't really say that. And by the way, it's also bad business to say that. I don't know if you know this, but gay people have big, they've got money too. Back to the abortion thing. The murdering of unborn children. Oh my God. The murdering of unborn children. Okay, where the... Okay. So Trump cares about the murder of unborn children. Fine, all right. Forget about all the born people. Soldiers we sent to war. All that stuff. Don't worry about it. And of course, all the people that were just kicking out of the country because they're brown. Forget about that. He cares about the unborn children. He doesn't know what he cares about. He knows he cares about one Donald J. Trump. As far as the rest of you, well, he can just do without you. He can care about the rest of you. This was put on full display when he decided to give a speech. So they have this Right for Life rally in D.C. every year. It was a couple weeks ago. And Donald Trump, of course, because those are his people, he decided to get up and speak, and he decided to, you know, give his usual rambling, oh my God, he has no effing idea what he's saying, speech. And when he did so, he ended up pointing out that he doesn't particularly like when babies make it all the way to 9 months.
Now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the 9th month. It is wrong. It has to change.
It's wrong. That's all the 9th month. Well, I'm not sure when he decided to leave his mama's vajayjay, but that's generally when most of us leave the womb. But they believe in him, and they're propping him up, and this is their guy, and they're going to stand with him because he gives them religious freedom. They're going to stand with him no matter what.
This week, I was finally able to Google Stormy Daniels on my work computer. In an interview from 2011, porn star Stormy Daniels said that while she was having an affair with Donald Trump, he told her she was beautiful and smart, just like his daughter. which is somehow the grossest thing a man has ever said to Stormy Daniels.
The Stormy Daniels story matters for not just the usual reasons. Now, remember, when it came to Monica Lewinsky, I mean, that was a crime because a Democrat did it and all these other things. And holy crap, he's got to be impeached because he lied about screwing around on his wife, Hillary Clinton. And the Republicans love Hillary Clinton so much that she cannot be screwed around on. And if she gets screwed around on, he definitely cannot lie about it because they love Hillary Clinton so much. Come on. Cut the crap, guys. But the Stormy Daniels story, you would think that really kind of being the exact same thing. He cheated on his wife. He even paid her off. Right? And he's lying about it now. But the impeachment proceedings have not started. The evangelicals aren't calling for him. The Trump voters aren't calling for them. The Republicans, their representatives, the ones that matter, they're not calling for them. And they're saying, oh, this, you know, consenting adults, this is a, oh, maybe this isn't even real. Maybe Stormy's lying. Of course, Stormy, she signed a document saying that she would not tell her story. So here's the way it goes. On January 12th, the Wall Street Journal reported that Trump, through his lawyer, Michael Cohen, had paid Stephanie Clifford 1 month before the election to buy her silence about the affair that she had with Trump in 2006. Clifford is an adult film actor who performs under the name Stormy Daniels. The affair allegedly took place shortly after Trump's third wife, Melania, gave birth to his son, Barron. So evangelicals, totally cool, right? Cohen then released a letter purportedly by Daniels and dated 2 days before the story published, denying that she had ever had a sexual relationship with Trump. Daniels, of course, has not publicly commented on the accuracy of the letter. The letter directly contradicts the contemporaneous account of another adult film actor, Alana Evans, who is a friend of Stormy Daniels, who said she talked to Trump on the phone when he was with Daniels and he invited her to come over and party. Evans says Daniels told her that she had sex with Donald Trump. Ladies and gentlemen, Alana Evans.
Having her tell me the next day when I asked how did it go, and she says, well, picture this, Donald Trump chasing me around the bedroom in his tidy whities isn't something that you ever forget.
Somehow this story just continues to get grosser and grosser. The reason why the Stormy Daniels story matters is because this shows that Trump is willing to lie about his sexual encounters with women, which makes it very likely that most, if not all, of these women who are coming forward are telling the truth about what he did. But Trump voters and evangelicals and some one and the same, they've decided that this is okay because this is their guy. Another reason is this story has parallels to other women's claims about sexual assault by Trump. And it points out, when the Access Hollywood tape came out, Trump instantly ran out, sent his lawyer out to pay off Stormy Daniels. Don't talk, don't talk. And the National Enquirer even bought her story from her. She got her interview with the National Enquirer, and then they never released the story. Boom. They said, this is our exclusive. Boom. So they covered the story on two bases to make sure that it never, ever got out. The story suggests that Trump is vulnerable to blackmail and extortion. We heard, I don't remember, towards the end of the election or just after the election of 2016, it leaked out that the Russians had a pee tape of Donald Trump. I don't remember if it was Trump getting peed on or if he was peeing on women, but he stayed in a Russian hotel. And there's a long history about the Russians and their surveillance society. I mean, we've got kind of the same thing, but there are some places where we still don't have cameras, and it's not necessarily the same in Russia. And I think the reason the word about the pee tape leaked out was Vladimir Putin's way of saying, you better give us everything that we want, because we've got dirt on you. And the Stormy Daniels story tells us exactly that. That this guy, he's got these skeletons. He's got these things that could compromise him. that could compromise the entire country. And that's, I mean, aside from the whole oogie factor, cheating on his wife, you know, while she's at home with the baby and all, and, you know, the porn star and all this stuff, the larger thing here is that he, with all this crap in his closet, he is in a position where he could be blackmailed.
If you put aside the ethical debate, is there a legal problem potentially here?
There certainly is a legal problem here, and it stems from the fact that this appears to have been a payment to influence the election, and that is defined under federal campaign finance law as a political expenditure. The timing here matters. This payment to Stormy Daniels came about 3 weeks before the general election. It came about a week after the expose of a very important tape revealing Donald Trump engaged in some banter, some locker room banter, as he called it, the Access Hollywood tape. And it comes at a time when Stormy Daniels was reported to be talking to some major news outlets, Good Morning America, Slate, maybe others, about going public with her story. All of those facts together make this look like a payment to influence the election. That means it was an expenditure by Team Trump. They didn't report it to the FEC. That's violation number one. Violation number two is if this money came from anyone other than President Trump's pockets, his own pockets, then that's looking like an illegal campaign contribution in kind to the committee. Either an illegal corporate contribution, if it came from the Trump organization, or an illegally excessively large contribution because it exceeds the $2,700 contribution limit if it came from an individual.
We are in year two of the Me Too movement. And I suppose it's both a blessing and a curse that we've got this figurehead for our country right now. This guy who is this gigantic monolith of lies and sexual assault and who just does not care very much for women. They're nothing more than pleasure objects. You know, places for him to dump his seed. He doesn't care. And to watch not just the religious folks and not just the white power folks and the alt-right, you know, those two groups are also not all that awesome when it comes to women. But to watch all these people that supposedly have, you know, the religious people bother me the most. Not that they're religious, but that they're completely okay with all of this as long as they perceive that they're getting religious freedom. But it's not just them. The Trump White House isn't just full of men. There are plenty of women that work in there too. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Hope Hicks. There was Omarosa, but man, she's dumping dirt on him right now. There's plenty of women that work inside the White House. Obviously, completely okay with all of this. He got most white women to vote for him during the election. So that's just the people that work for him. See, when there are these things, like with Harvey Weinstein and Larry Nassar and Donald Trump, it's not just them. They need enablers. They need people to help them lie. And roughly 50% of any given population in any country is going to be women. And so statistically, you're going to find women that are a part of the cover-up, that are a part of the crime as well, that are also that are completely okay with this kind of thing going on to other women. And maybe they're victims themselves. And maybe that's why they go along with it, because this is just the way things are, you know? Or maybe they feel like they can't say anything. He's too powerful. We've got this patriarchal society. I can't say anything. I can't do anything. You know, or maybe they feel like if they say something, then what's going to happen to them is potentially going to be way worse than what happened to the victim. A lot of the victims become victims and by and large go away quietly. Their lives are harmed to a great degree, but they just kind of walk around with that pain in silence. And if someone says anything, the rape, well, they'll learn that the rape or sexual assault was only the opening act. And if you challenge these folks, it's just going to get worse. I've heard any number of conservative women say that what was happening at the Women's March, of which we had another one this year, and I imagine we'll have them every year while Chief Vijay Grabber is in the White House. There are tons of conservative women that say they need to stop calling it the Women's March because these women are not marching for me. They are not speaking for me. And yeah, they are. See, you're not willing to admit that it's a problem. Maybe because of your politics. Maybe because you see sexual assault as a normalized thing. Women being second-class citizens, sexually and economically, politically, and all of that's okay with you. I am a guy who benefits greatly from not just being male, but also from being white. But I do not want any of those benefits. Call me a pussy if you want. But I don't particularly care for war. I don't watch UFC. I don't like watching people fight. I don't like watching people kick the crap out of each other. I myself have been in quite a few fights because I grew up in the ghetto and had the stuff kicked out of me. And I don't like it. And it's not because I'm weak or a sissy or don't want to fight. I don't see the freaking point of all of this this super aggressive, let's kill and beat each other. I don't understand the point of it. And I would like to see a society where we are not punching, where we are not killing, where we are not hurting one another. And from my own reading, my own studies, I have seen that societies where women have equal power, equal or more power than men, those societies don't go to war. Those societies have less inequality. Those societies have population stabilization. Those societies are just better run. So the headline here from by Tom McCarthy, women are pissed. Trump protest turns to action in a surge of female candidates. We'll get into what Russia is planning on doing with the 2018 elections in a later show. I'm still digging up information about that. But I love the fact that there are so many women that are turning out and that are running for office this year. There's an episode of The Simpsons a while back where President Lisa Simpson, she became president after Donald Trump was president, which is just stunning. And one of the lines from that show was that, boy, President Trump sure left us a gigantic deficit. We better do something about it. And it's just that show is just, it seems that show is so able to predict the future in such a beautiful way. I honestly believe, and I make predictions, sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. I'm predicting that after the presidency of one Donald Trump, We're finally going to end up with our first female president, because people aren't just going to be looking for someone that's different from Donald Trump. They're going to be looking for somebody that's different from men.
And then, of course, there's ongoing news about women and men and abuse and so forth. And there is, I found a fascinating piece by Andrew Sullivan, a well-known homosexual man. He's a liberal left-wing columnist and commentator who sometimes offers revelations that betray his left-wing identity. And he has grown very, very concerned what he thinks this latest women's protest movement is really about. And he's right in this assessment. He says that they are trying to get rid of maleness, the whole notion of what it is to be male, not individual men, but that the idea that there are men is something that needs to be eliminated.
So this from E! News, the headline, Mila Kunis gets hasty pudding honor and helps announce new pro-women policy. Quoting here, Mila Kunis arrived in Freezing Cambridge, Massachusetts to accept the annual Woman of the Year award from Harvard University's Hasty Pudding Theatricals Group and help them make a surprising announcement over its longstanding tradition of banning women from performing in its shows. So the Hasty Pudding Group has been around over 230 years. It's a theater group at Harvard. And women, up until now, have never been able to be a part of it. And after 230 years, they've lifted that ban, and women are now allowed to be a part of the theatrical group. 230 years. And it was lots and lots of public pressure that helped make this happen. I see this as a microcosm of what we can do on a much larger scale. So there's an article over at The Guardian by Christine Bennett. And the headline is, "When Feminists Insult Each Other, Chauvinists Cheer." I want to address something really quickly. My house is full of ladies. I've got three daughters, a wife, two female cats, a female turtle, all the animals. All the animals, all the humans, every single person in this house is a female. Except for Melvin. Melvin's obviously male. But that's really the way that I prefer it. And so we talk a lot about dialogue in our house. I have problems with a lot of our English language. I've got problems with folks that say, like. So, like, I went to the store and, like, I was walking down the aisle. And then, like, I saw what I was looking for. So I, like, picked it up and went up to the counter. And then I, like, said hi to the lady at the counter, and then I, like, put my money on the counter, and then she, like, bagged it up for me, and then I, like, left with it. Okay. I went to the store. I was looking for Sody Pop. Whatever. I'm not going to give brand names here. Found what I was looking for at aisle six. Went up to the counter. Had a short, engaging conversation with the very nice woman at the counter. Got my stuff, left the store. See how much cleaner that is? Because we talk so much about that kind of thing in our house, because I want my girls, because I'm sending girls out into the world, are already going to be judged pretty harshly just for the fact that they are girls. And there's a lot of society that's going to look down upon them. Obviously, in their jobs, they're probably going to make less than everybody else. And so I'm helping build women that are going to sort of help change the narrative on this, I believe. And I believe the first way that you help change the narrative is by standing out. And a good way to stand out is with good language. Not just good language, but also being good and assertive in your language. You know, you don't understand. Communication is something that we are sorely lacking. When you like, right? You say things like that, it really just, it may not kill you with a lot of people, but, I mean, when someone starts talking like that, I immediately stop listening to what they're saying, and I start counting how many times they say the word like, so that I can point out, excuse me, how many frigging times you said like. And one of the other things we talk about is my daughters, since starting school and being a little older, middle school, high school, they've gotten a little more, kids at that age get a little more assertive, a little more confrontational. And so men use these words towards women. Bitch, hoe, slut, trick. Right? These are not things, these are not words that we use towards men. Men to use towards men. You know, men, if a man is sexually promiscuous, he's a stud, he's a pimp, he's all these other things. Double standard. And so when my daughters at home get mad at each other, more than a few times I've heard them throw the word bitch at one another. And then I got to step in. No, no, no. That word is used. I'll never forget this conversation. My eldest said it to my middle child. And I said, that is a word, it's a man's word that is used to oppress women. You're using male language to oppress your gender. And she thought about it for a minute. She goes, yeah. But what am I supposed to say? And I go, if you're upset with her, talk with her what you're upset with her about. Let's try to steer clear of name-calling at all, but if you do, definitely don't go to these poisonous words that men came up with to oppress women. And then she stopped and she looked at me and she goes, what does the word bitch even mean? Exactly. That's right. You didn't use it because you knew what it meant. You've heard that word used towards other women. Very rare you see a man called a bitch. But you heard that word being used towards women. You got into a fight with your female sister. And then it just came out and you didn't even know what it meant. You just said it. You just responded. And so I'm helping them to realize those things about their language. Now, it's annoying. I'm annoying. I understand that, right? When I point out that somebody said the word like 30 times and say, you know, a four sentence, you know, vocal paragraph, they get furious with me. What are you doing? Did you even hear what I said? Yeah, you said like 30 times. Huh? They get mad at me. But there's a lot of facets to this that we need to understand. If we're going to get women, say, on societally, on where men are at, right, where we get a fairly equal society. It's never going to be completely equal, but there's a few things that need to change, right? We need to recognize sexual assault when it happens. We need to not tear women down and, you know, hurl at them every doubt in the world when they say something. We need to not use words that are designed to be oppressive to women. And yeah, you may not like everything that happens at the Women's March, Mr. Conservative Woman. Excuse me, Conservative Woman. You may not like everything that's being said there. But by and large, what is being said there isn't just for liberal women. It's for you too.
It's 2009 and I'm 14 and I'm crying. Not really sure where I am, but I'm holding the hand of my best friend Sam in the waiting room of a Planned Parenthood. The air is sterile and clean and the walls are that not gray but green, and the lights are so bright they could burn a hole through the seam of my jeans, and my phone is buzzing in the pocket. My mom is asking me if I remembered my keys because she's closing the door and she needs to lock it. But I can't tell my mom where I've gone. I can't tell anyone at all. You see, my best friend Sam was raped by a man that we knew because he worked in the after-school program. And he held her down with her textbooks beside her and he covered her mouth and then he came inside her. So now I'm with Sam at the place with a plan, waiting for the results of a medical exam, and she's praying she doesn't need an abortion. She couldn't afford it, and her parents would, like, totally kill her. It's 2002, and my family just moved, and the only people I know are my mom's friend Sue and her son. He's got a case of Matchbox cars, and he says that he'll teach me to play the guitar if I just keep quiet. And the stairwell beside apartment 1245 will haunt me in my sleep for as long as I am alive. And I'm too young to know why it aches in my thighs, but I must lie. I must lie. It's 2012 and I'm dating a guy and I sleep in his bed and I just learned how to drive. And he's older than me and he drinks whiskey neat and he's paying for everything. This adult thing, it's not cheap. We've been fighting a lot, almost 10 times a week, and he wants to have sex, and I just want to sleep, but he says I can't say no to him. This much I owe to him. He buys my dinner, so I have to blow him. He's taken to forcing me down on my knees, and I'm confused because he's hurting me while he says please. And he's only a man, and these things he just needs, he's my boyfriend. So why am I filled with unease?
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Halsey. You may not know who she is. A couple years ago, I didn't know who Halsey was. It took becoming a DJ before I finally figured out who she was. And that's because I stopped following a lot of popular music, say around the early aughts. Because I was into death metal and hardcore hip-hop. That was my thing. And I didn't follow pop music. A couple years ago, I became a DJ. I became aware of all this new music and all these new artists, and Halsey is one of them. You may not know who she is, but she is a gigantic pop star, and I mean selling out stadiums, you know, commanding hundreds of dollars per ticket to see her sometimes, meet and greets that can get into the thousands. She's massive. She's got this tremendous voice. You know, she's absolutely beautiful. She's got all these things going for her. And she said, you know, she tells these harrowing stories, things that happened to her, things that affected her in her life. You know, simply because she is a woman, these things happened to her. And then when she started singing and she got noticed and she became a pop star and she started selling records and, you know, she plays some clubs and then she plays some stadiums and she goes, finally, I'm there. You know, nobody can ever hurt me ever again.
It's 2017 and I live like a queen and I follow damn near every one of my dreams. I'm invincible and I'm so f***ing naive. I believe I'm protected because I live on a screen. Nobody would dare act that way around me. I've earned my protection, eternally clean. Until a man that I trust gets his hands in my pants. But I don't want none of that. I just wanted to dance. And I wake up the next morning like I'm in a trance and there's blood. Is that my blood? Oh, hold on a minute. You see, I've worked every day since I was 18. I've toured everywhere from Japan to Mar-a-Lago. I even went on stage that night in Chicago when I was having a miscarriage. I mean, I pied the piper, I put on a diaper, and sang out my spleen to a room full of teens. What do you mean this happened to me? You can't put your hands on me. You don't know what my body has been through. I'm supposed to be safe now. I earned it. It's 2018, and I've realized that nobody is safe long as she is alive. And every friend that I know has a story like mine. And the world tells me we should take it as a compliment. But then heroes like Ashley and Simone and Gabby, Michaela and Gaga, Rosario, Ali, remind me this is the beginning, it is not the finale, and that's why we're here, and that's why we rally. It's Olympians and a medical resident, and not one f***ing word from the man who is president. It's about closed doors and secrets and legs and stilettos from the Hollywood Hills to the projects and ghettos when babies are ripped from the arms of teen mothers and child brides cry globally under the covers who don't have a voice on the magazine covers. They tell us, take cover. But we are not free until all of us are free. So love your neighbor. Please treat her kindly. Ask her her story and then shut up and listen. Black, Asian, poor, wealthy, trans, cis, Muslim, Christian, listen, and then yell at the top of your lungs. Be a voice for all those who have prisoner tongues, for the people who had to grow up way too young. There is work to be done. There are songs to be sung. Lord knows there's a war to be won. Thank you.
Halsey is a pop star, and she's a progressive, and she didn't get into politics before publicly, but she is now because it's a woman's issue. By virtue of being a woman, she really is out in front of the Me Too movement right now. So let's consider another genre of music, country western, which is generally a conservative music. So Halsey stands up and says all these things, you know, that are not just her. It's all women, or at least many women. And then I was listening to a snippet of an interview the other day about, Carrie Underwood, you know, pop country star. And they were talking about, she's in this new video for this song that she's got out right now. And they go, my God, you look good. Do you realize how good you look, Miss Carrie?
Carrie Underwood looked amazing, as always, in her new video with Ludacris for The Champion. Carrie works hard at her personal fitness, and it shows.
I like to work out, and I like to eat healthy. It's part of what I do. I gotta keep, my body is my tool, you know, and I've gotta keep it good.
It's music, and her worth should be seen in the music she creates, right? In the voice that she has and that she shares with the world. That's not the way she sees it. See, men don't have to deal with this. I mean, Bob Dylan is super old, super gross, still sells out stadiums, you know, and you can go on and on. This is a thing that doesn't happen with men in music. No matter how ugly they get, it's totally cool. But Carrie Underwood realizes the part of playing the game is looking good. And when you see a lot of the promo pics, it has nothing to do with music. It's not generally them on stage or them playing piano or guitar or drums or anything like that. It's generally them, you know, in sexually suggestive photos. And that's not something that happens with men. It's only something that happens with women. That's why we're here now. That's why we speak out against this stuff. And that's why we're trying to make something happen. And I would like to see everybody be a part of this movement. Men, you can be an ally. Women, even conservative, especially conservative women, you need to join in on this too. Because when others are oppressed, and I'm not breaking news here, but when others are oppressed, nobody is free.
This is a movie about, it's the First Amendment. It's not number five. It's mm-hmm. not number six. The founders were very clear about this, that in order for a democracy to function, the press needs to work for the governed, not the governing. So it's an important reminder at any time, but especially now when in this unprecedented way we have someone whose political strategy is based on delegitimizing the press.
That's Bradley Whitford talking about the new movie, The Post, which is, of course, about the Washington Post. And he's talking about press freedom. And a large part of the problem that we have now when it comes to press freedom is that Donald Trump is working the refs. That's an old political term. And what that means, essentially, so the refs obviously see everything that goes on. And they are largely in charge of the outcome because of the way they decide or they report. And so Donald Trump's put this idea out that anything that's critical of him or his movement or the conservatives is just fake news. None of it's real. And it sounds ridiculous to most of us, but there's a small part of the population to where it does not sound ridiculous. And a couple weeks ago, we learned about, and CNN has its headquarters in Georgia. They got tons and tons of death threats. And some guy said he's going to come there, he's just going to mow the whole place down. And that's not unheard of in America. We have shootings like that all the time. What is today? Thursday? Friday? Great. There's a shooting going on somewhere right now. I have no doubt about it. You may not hear about it, unless it kills 20, 30, or 40, or 50 people. But if it mows down half a dozen, that's just okay. That's just another day in America. And this guy, believing what Trump says, Trump, a man who's told 2,000 verifiable lies to the press in just the last year alone, 2,000 verifiable lies. This guy took the words of Donald Trump, right? Even someone that lies that much. He took the words of that guy and decided that he was going to destroy the rest of his life, because he believed the things that Donald Trump says.
This story hits close to home. It's a Michigan man. He's been arrested after he allegedly made numerous calls to CNN headquarters in Atlanta threatening to kill this network's employees. His name is Brandon Grismer. Allegedly made 22 calls to CNN on January 9th and 10th. Four of those calls, which were recorded, contained threats, according to the federal affidavit. And there's nothing random about this. Nothing. This is what happens when the President of the United States, Donald Trump, repeatedly attacks members of the press simply for reporting facts he does not like. The President, just this morning, blasting our very own Jim Acosta and calling CNN fake news. A charge he has leveled at the press, not just CNN, over and over.
The media is rigged.
You are fake news.
Yeah, I think the media is the opposition party in many ways.
The fake media is trying to silence us, but we will not let them.
A few days ago, I called the fake news the enemy of the people, and they are. They are the enemy of the people.
Sir, do you want people to come in from other parts of the world where there are people of color?
Thank you. I've
heard from a number of very credible sources from within the White House, that you watch this show. You deny it all the time, but then you you know, say something disparaging about me. And the only way you would know that is if you saw the show. So, Mr. President, I'm going to speak directly to you. We are not the enemy. We are not trying to silence you. It is the job of the free press to report the facts, to ask questions, tough questions, ones you don't like, even if you don't like the facts or those questions. No matter how many times you attack us as fake news, we will continue to do our jobs. When you make that baseless and incendiary charge, be aware that people are listening to you, some very dangerous people. According to a federal affidavit, the caller who threatened to kill CNN employees made his threat using these words, quote, fake news. I'm coming to gun you all down. Fake news. I wonder where he got that, those words. And in the second call, quote, I am on my way right now to gun the effing CNN cast down. I am coming to kill you. So I can only speak for myself, but I know my coworkers have also had threats at this network, other networks, other news organizations. There's an open case with the NYPD right now with someone who's threatening to kill me. When you, Donald Trump, tweet the post of a train hitting CNN, you might think it's funny. It's not. It's stupid. It's actually childish. My 10-year-old nephew wouldn't even do something like that. When you tweet a doctored video of you body slamming CNN, people are watching. What grade are you in? People take that message seriously. And if one of us is hurt or, God forbid, something else in some way or another, because you either don't understand the power of your words and or you don't care, it won't be a fake injury or, sadly, a fake death. It'll be real. And how will you answer those questions then, not only from journalists, but from our loved ones? Because you're going to have to do it. Let's hope it doesn't happen. Let's hope you see the error of your ways as well.
I think the audio speaks for itself, and I don't think I need to point out to you, whether you are progressive or conservative, the absolute importance of the media. When right-wing media goes on the air every day, and I listen to it, and lies to people, day in and day out, Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, when they lie, and I can demonstrate how every single one of them is lying, and I do on this show, even you benefit from our free media. We benefit from the free media by getting out good information to one another. The thing that I do here on this show, that's what we do with the free media. And if we have a media where we're not allowed to be free, even you as a conservative with your lies, even you are not going to be able to put good information out there because it will all be propaganda. It will all be state run. It will all be Trumpistan. And even you, Mr. and Mrs. Conservative, even you are not going to like that. We should all, regardless of political stripes, all be protecting and defending the free press. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. My name is Melvin. I was your host. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Listen, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. Listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement of inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing. Thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I have woken you up, good morning.